Good evening, Commanders. I'm Sandy Grevis, and welcome to this week's show. I'll be mashing the buttons tonight, so if anything catches fire, it's probably my fault.
While Sandy's playing with the knobs, I'm proud to announce my latest series of Autumn Scene Watch, where I sit in the corner with binoculars and watch all those lovely little seams hatch.
Well, they're definitely not an endangered species. Not tonight. If you do see any more, I've got the template apology ready to go.
And just in case they're naughty, I've got my pan on standby. I've got a black belt in panology and a degree in rocket.
And I'm Mike Rochburns, and I got asked back for some reason.
And now, the headlines.
Marope mining mishap mystifies engineers.
Mandalay test firing, the 11 wasn't just for volume.
Kane's quiet coup, prepping for power without the Overlord vibe.
Shinra to Desra's post-Thargoid conundrum, clean up collectibles and a mop hero.
404 degrees. Weather not found.
And I'm hoping to influence you to influence us.
First this evening, a minor mining mission in the Marope system took a dramatic turn this week, when automated equipment experienced an unexpected and rather inconvenient malfunction. The team, sent to gather valuable materials from Marope 5C, found themselves in a precarious position after their precision drills, rather than burrowing into the rich mineral deposits, decided instead to dance a delicate but damaging duet into one another. Early reports suggest that the drill's targeting systems became confused by local magnetic anomalies. Instead of locking onto the designated deposit, the systems evidently deemed the nearest object, namely the other drill, as the prime source of mineral wealth. The result was a somewhat spectacular display of industrial equipment pirouetting across the landscape, showering the area with enough sparks to briefly convince nearby settlers they were witnessing an unscheduled fireworks show. "It's quite the head-scratcher," said team leader Commander Dirk Dangerous. While standing beside the smouldering remains of what had once been a cutting-edge technology, we triple-checked the alignment before we started. At one point, both drills looked like they were doing a ballet. Graceful, but financially dangerous. Engineers are currently sifting through the wreckage in a desperate bid to pinpoint the problem. Early theories range from simple calibration errors to a far more dramatic cause: rumours of Thargoid interference. According to one over-enthusiastic technician, the drills may have been hypnotised by alien signals. Though how an extraterrestrial influence would prompt mining gear to engage in a mid-operation joust remains somewhat unclear. "Frankly, I'm not buying the alien angle," commented seasoned miner Nora Nottingham as she watched yet another overcomplicated diagnostic scan. "The machinery's probably just on the fritz again. The last time we had a problem like this, it was down to some joker wiring up the control panel backwards. But hey, at least it wasn't another planetary collapse." In the meantime, the local mining consortium, Marope Miners United, has issued a statement reassuring investors that despite the minor mechanical mishap, production quotas will still be met. To compensate for the lost time and lost equipment, they have vowed to deploy additional mining vessels and have offered affected crew members a free round of drinks back at the orbital bar. Whether this will be enough to raise spirits remains to be seen, though early indications suggest that only the high-grade gin on offer will come close. As for Commander Dangerous, his team is underrated by the disaster. and undeterred even. Undeterred by the disaster. We'll get this sorted after all. It's just another day in the Marope system. In other news, security forces have been alerted to an unusual uptick in transmissions from the nearby crashed Thargoid ships. While officials stress that these incidents are unrelated, a few anxious miners have taken to carrying personal defense lasers, in case the drills weren't the only things acting up.
And what can only be described as an overzealous demonstration of what happens when you push things too far, the latest test of the Mandalay's engines have left several test pilots recovering in medbays, and others trying to figure out what day it is. Early trials of the Mandalay, set to launch in coming weeks, have shown just how potent its propulsion systems can be. Possibly too potent. During a particularly enthusiastic test firing, the engine, designed to be a game-changer in interstellar travel, catapulted several commanders across the system faster than anyone anticipated. One pilot, dazed and somewhat bemused, was overheard saying, "I swear I left on Tuesday and woke up the next Wednesday." The ship's acceleration was so extreme that sensors struggled to keep up, leaving the engineering team scrambling to find their errant test pilots somewhere in the outer reaches of space. It seems that part of the problem was the large control knob in the engine room, a device humorously labelled with levels ranging from cautious stroll to 11, a reference to some long-forgotten ancient Cherent joke about volume controls. Unfortunately, the first test pilot clearly mistook the 11 setting as the default, much to the surprise of everyone. As a result, the Mandalay's engines ripped space-time a new one, flinging its passenger across multiple hyperspace conduits at speeds even the ship's designers hadn't foreseen. Engineers are now working to dial the settings down to something a little more sensible, somewhere between warp speed brunch and afternoon tea acceleration. One unnamed designer was overheard muttering, "Well, we never really thought anyone would actually turn it all the way up to 11. But now that we've seen the result, maybe a more reasonable max is in order." While the mishap has led to some unfortunate calendar confusion and light bruising, excitement around the Mandalay is still at an all-time high. The ship's performance, while currently pushing the boundaries of common sense, is expected to revolutionise long-distance travel when, or if, they get the settings under control. Until then, we just have to keep an eye on the clock and possibly the calendar when the next trial run kicks off. The Mandalay is still slated for its official release in coming weeks, with pilots awaiting their chance to test the ship, hopefully without temporal displacement. In the meantime, it's probably best if the engineers keep a very close eye on the engine knob, and maybe replace it with something a little less prone to over-enthusiastic twisting.
As Nakato came inches or ever closer to her de facto ascension as a galactic power, the preparations in Tia Nisla are both subtle and at times absurdly over the top. Transitioning from local politician to a galactic player is no small feat. It's not just about amassing a fleet or making promises. Kane's operation is a delicate mix of military manoeuvres, political placation, and crucially, rebranding. Kane's team has been methodically building a defensive force, but without the pomp of Imperial militarism. The Tia Nisland fleet, doubling as diplomatic couriers, look less like a show of force and more like an extra armoured tea party. There are transports disguised as humble envoys and patrol ships that just happen to be packing enough firepower to obliterate a Thargoid, or at least enough to keep a curious system governor in check. Her strategy? Not screaming overlord while securing her turf. And while the build-up has all the hallmarks of a military escalation, Kane has been quick to brush off any concerns. She has politely declined multiple offers from Alvin Defer, who is ready to give lessons in proper territory marking techniques. When it comes to claiming new territory, nothing says subtle coup quite like a good paint job. K Paints entourage has been busy requisitioning more paint than a shipyard rave, carefully planning her signature hues. Rumour has it, Tianisian stations will soon glow with friendly shades like Diplomat Blue and Alliance Green. Not the menacing crimson one might expect from a rising power, but the kind of colours that say, I'm approachable. Definitely not your new overlord. Naturally, Kane turned down Eddie Lee Wise and Sons, plus his daughters, the galaxy's go-to tailor, for a bit of flair. While his esteemed tailors tried to pitch everything from imperial cloaks to pirate hats, Kane settled on more practical uniforms. Neighbourhood Captain Chic, rather than Galactic Despo. No capes, no golden thrones, and certainly no uniforms with too many sparkly bits. Still, the logistics behind this rebranding effort are staggering. According to sources, Operation Repaint is set to be a coordinated galaxy-wide campaign. Stations across multiple systems will receive their visual overhaul overnight, ensuring that when Kane is finally announced, the galaxy will wake up to her new look like it's always been there. Of course, taking over chunks of the galaxy requires more than just a fresh coat of paint. Kane's been hard at work convincing local political factions that everything is fine. Situation normal. Nothing to worry about here. Meetings with planetary councils have become weekly events where her aides reassure everyone that life under Kane's leadership will be just like it was under Mahon, just better organised with more colourful signage. Kane's team has been running a quiet campaign of reassurance, ensuring that local systems understand that her sudden rise isn't a radical shift but simply the next logical step. It's all about framing, one anonymous insider mentioned. Flags need to look like they were always there, just waiting for the right wind to unfurl them. It's no secret that staging a galaxy-wide coup, without calling it that, costs a fair bit of coin. Kane's open disdain for corporate giants like Sirius has led to some interesting backchannel funding. Various industrialists and independent magnates, disillusioned with Mahon's corporatism, have stepped in to fund Kane's push for power. From creative power regulators to advanced ship modules, the supply lines are humming. But where's all the money coming from? One could speculate, but Kane's too savvy to let the galaxy see the full extent of her purse. Kane's message to the galaxy is clear. This isn't a hostile takeover, it's just a fresh start. With paintbrushes in one hand and reassurance memos in the other, she's pushing to make her rise to power as palatable as possible. After all, no one ever worried about a neighbour who's just freshened up the front garden, even if that neighbour has a few too many anti-Xeno cannons tucked behind the bushes. In short, keep calm and watch for the friendly new coat of paint coming to a system near you. Just don't ask too many questions about the armed diplomatic couriers.
Following the repulsion of the Thargoid invasion at Shinra Tadezra, the system has been left to deal with an entirely new threat. A massive amount of alien muck. With Jameson Memorial back online and pilots returning to their business, the starport now resembles more a high-tech petri dish than the bustling hub it once was. Hutton Orbital has responded to the calls for help in its own unique way, dispatching their legendary floor mopping guy, armed with his trusty space mop and anti-Xeno bucket. Known across the galaxy for preventing bio-waste floods at Hutton and keeping floors shiny even during station emergencies, Floor Mopping Guy is the perfect candidate to handle what remains of the Thargoid invasion. Pilots passing through Shinrata are already reporting sightings of him valiantly scrubbing down landing pads, carefully collecting any suspicious green glue in his bucket, while dodging bewildered Sirius technicians. One local remarked, "I thought I saw a Thargoid heart twitching, but then he just calmly mopped it up. I reckon he single-handedly saved us from an infestation." The cleanup, however, has turned into more than just a janitorial task, with literal piles of Thorgood biomaterial scattered across Jameson Memorial, the debate over what to do with the remains has intensified. Some entrepreneurial commanders have started requesting doggy bags for their unique finds. Rumours of Thargoid goo as the next great black market collectible are already circulating in some sectors. In a turn of events that probably shouldn't surprise anyone, Hutton Orbital's pseudoscientific expert, LCU No Fool Like One, has been spotted poking around the mess. LCU, who once famously attempted to crossbreed barnacles with cargo canisters, don't ask, has arrived with a team of researchers, proudly equipped with containers marked Thargoid Doggy Bag. I'll try that again. Thargoid Doggy Bag contents may mutate. Whether his findings will lead to the next breakthrough in anti-xeno warfare or just another questionable science experiment remains to be seen. Not to be outdone, Sirius Corporation and Azimuth Biochemicals have also shown great interest in the remains. Both megacorps have offered to pay to safely remove the biomaterial, promising it'll be used for scientific purposes. Pilots are understandably sceptical, given Azimuth's notorious track record for turning alien tech into galaxy-sized headaches. One commander quipped, "What's next? Thargoid-centered cologne? No thanks. I'm sending it all into a black hole." Despite the swirling conspiracy theories and a research team keen to dissect every last glob of Thargoid remains, floor-mopping guy remains undeterred. He continues to mop up the remains, stoic in his mission to keep Shinrata Desra clean and green-free. As one witness put it, the galaxy may be at war, but at least we know the floors will be spotless. And so, while the debate rages on about what to do with the alien leftovers, it's comforting to know that thanks to Hutton's unassuming hero, we won't be slipping on the Thargoid sludge anytime soon. Keep your eyes peeled for those doggy bags, though. LCU's been muttering something about fascinating new properties as he stuffed a chunk of pulsating green mass into a jar.
Today, the Galbeeb chose to commemorate the ancient soul tradition of talking about the weather. For those of us in space stations, such as the glorious orbital we call home, weather is like when Dustybot accidentally gets the station climate control buttons confused and everyone ends up a little bit damp. Just on a much bigger planetary scale. As a part of this commemoration, the station announcements were giving predictions of wind speeds about 16 times the speed of sound down the station corridors, which in Seoul would have been deemed somewhere between a stiff breeze and a hurricane. Galbeeb did put out a statement to say, "Do not worry, your climate control is not broken, you are not going to blow away." The station toy shop did notice a particular uptick in the sale of kites, which proved to be a massive disappointment to everyone, as they only work near the air circulation vents and only on Fridays. When they completely recycle all the station's air over the space of an afternoon with a new set to prevent it smelling like rancid mushrooms. Archaeologists did also ask if the announcement was in a commemoration of a weather-presenting fish who formerly got the weather forecasts wrong, but Galbeeb declined to comment. They did point out that while hurricanes happen planet-side all the time across the galaxy, and everyone should take great care to look after themselves in those situations, such things inside of a space station only really happen when someone accidentally crashes into the outside of the station, perforating the outer walls and causing the air to escape at great speed. In which case, there are more important things to worry about, like being sucked into a vacuum of space. So it was obviously a hiccup in the reporting system whereby the decimal point got misplaced by a few positions. Meanwhile, in other parts of the galaxy, weather extremist groups made the outlandish claim that weather occurs naturally. This claim, after an unexplained weather event in the outer bubble, the strange winds turned into a funnel and proceeded to draw up large phallus on the open area of a desert visible from space. The local weather agency denies responsibility, but in the same press release also stated, "Our Bring Your Kids to Work Day was a great success." Dead Meat TF, has been contacted for comment, but he was last seen running away with a big fan and giggling to himself. A coincidence? Sure, why not? But on a more serious note, if anyone is finding themselves caught out by hurricanes, please look after yourself and take the advice of the authorities and give you... Let me read that a bit again, because it's important. Take the advice of the authorities that they give you and make sure you look after each other in true Hutton fashion.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we peek behind the curtain of the BGS, see something we shouldn't, and then have nightmares for a week. We start with some influence news. Both Van Manen Star and our home system, Alpha Centauri, have poked their heads above our 60% influence threshold. Van Manen Star is recovering from an infrastructure failure and is into boom now, so let's keep an eye on that, but leave it alone. The booms this week are in WISE 0855-0714, PSPF LF2, Wolf359, 36 of Viucci, Barnard Star, George's Pants, Wolf124 and their Nsies. EP Eridani sees us in a massive elections with the Liberals of EP Eridani. Nice. And, well, that's about it. But what does it all mean? Our best guess is if you want to truck it, then go to EP Eridani and truck it for Hutton with trade and non-violent missions. If you want to shoot it, then let Vulcarius point you in the right direction for something to shoot at. And well, that's it for this week.